Yes, so it is a technique where you limit the amount of blood and therefore oxygen that's being delivered to skeletal muscle. So usually this is achieved by inflating a cuff and placing it around the arms or the legs. What's most common is for it to be performed with resistance training, and it's usually with low load resistance training. So loads of about 20 to 40% of someone's one rep max, and that's basically the main attraction of blood flow restriction is that it increases the training stress and leads to adaptations that are similar in most cases to high intensity training. So that makes it really promising for individuals that can't tolerate high loads or high intensities. You can still get the same benefit, but use much lower loads.
Hi, Charlie. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, my name is Dr. Charlie Davids. I am a lecturer in exercise and sports science at La Trobe University here in Melbourne. I'm a teaching and research academic, so I spend half my time teaching. So some of the subjects that I teach in exercise prescription and strength and conditioning, and then I also conduct research. So my research interests, broadly speaking, are all things resistance training, but I particularly have an interest in blood flow restriction exercise. So my pathway into academia was pretty straightforward. I did an undergraduate degree in sport and exercise science myself up in Brisbane at the University of Queensland. I did an honours degree, which was kind of built into that. And that's really what whet my appetite for research, just really enjoyed that, and then continued on to do a PhD at University of Queensland again. And that PhD was all focused on blood flow restriction exercise. And that's where I first learned about it and kind of started reading into it and really appreciated how cool and a novel style of training it is. And most of my research post-PhD has all been related to blood flow restriction exercise.
That's awesome. That's exactly the topic I want to discuss today. So let's start with what blood flow restriction is.
Yes, so it's a technique where you limit the amount of blood and therefore oxygen that's being delivered to skeletal muscle. So usually this is achieved by inflating a cuff and placing it around the arms or the legs. You can also use other implements like elastic wraps or a tourniquet, but most commonly it's a cuff that you can inflate, kind of like a blood pressure cuff, but a little bit skinnier. In the upper body, this is positioned at the top of the arm, so just below the shoulder, and in the lower body, it's at the top of the thigh. And the goal of this is to basically limit the amount of blood and then, yeah, therefore oxygen that's getting delivered to the exercising muscle. It can be performed at rest, so without exercise, but most commonly it is performed with various modes of exercise. What's most common is for it to be performed with resistance training, and it's usually with low load resistance training. So loads of about 20 to 40% of someone's one rep max, and that's basically the main attraction of blood flow restriction is that it increases the training stress and leads to adaptations that are similar in most cases to high intensity training. So that makes it really promising for individuals that can't tolerate high loads or high intensities. You can still get the same benefit, but use much lower loads.
Okay, it sounds very, very enticing. How it happens, how blood restriction can save us so much work and intensity put on the athletes or clients through this restricting of flow.
So the mechanisms are definitely a bit of a murky area still. There's a lot of mechanisms that have been proposed. I'll talk through two of the kind of more evidence-based ones. So really a key feature is something called metabolic stress. So we increase metabolic stress by adding blood flow restriction to exercise, whether it's resistance training or endurance training or aerobic training. So metabolic stress is basically where we have a mismatch between the energy supply and the energy demand during exercise. So we get an accumulation of these things called metabolites. So things like hydrogen ions, inorganic phosphate, and lactate, and they build up inside the muscle, and that can cause fatigue. Now, the role that metabolic stress has in hypertrophy is a bit of a confusing one. So some people think that these metabolites themselves are inherently anabolic, and there's some studies to kind of support that. For example, if we take muscle cells out of the body, put them in a petri dish, and then we administer lactate to those muscle cells, they increase in size. So it could be that blood flow restriction works through that mechanism. And that's essentially what we do with blood flow restriction because of the way that we restrict blood. Blood can go still into the muscle, but it can't really leave the muscle because our arteries sit a little bit deeper than our veins. So blood comes in, but it kind of can't go out as much. So we get this pooling of blood. So essentially, we're kind of just bathing our muscles in these metabolites that we accrue during exercise. So that could be one mechanism. The other mechanism that we know happens too which is related to metabolic stress, is that we have an increase in type 2 muscle fibers. So basically what happens when we usually perform resistance training with low loads, we would recruit maybe half of our muscle or a limited number of fibers, and then that would increase slowly as we do more and more work. Now with the increase in metabolic stress that happens with BFR, we basically draw upon more and more of those motor units and muscle fibers until we maximally recruit it, and then those fibers receive a bit of mechanical tension and then they adapt. So it's almost like we trick the body or the muscle into working a bit harder than it usually would for that given load by limiting the recovery and causing those metabolites to build up in the muscle.
So it sounds like the body is still working hard. It's just the loads, the external loads we need to use to elicit this response are lower.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's nothing inherently magical about blood flow restriction exercise. We can get the same response if we were to perform low load training to failure. It's just obviously a lot more time efficient approach to do that, and it's quite taxing physiologically for individuals or athletes to try and train to failure. So with blood flow restriction, it's almost like a bit of a cheat code. And if you think about during rest periods, like it might take like 30 reps in a set to get close to failure, and then if we rest for a little bit, we have to kind of repeat that process again. But with blood flow restriction, we essentially hit the pause button at the end of the set and we don't get much of a recovery, and we kind of pick up the next set from where we left off. So we can almost go deeper and deeper into that kind of metabolic stress and fatigue state, which makes it a lot more appealing to individuals instead of just telling them to do four sets of exercise till failure.
Awesome. So I think we're ready for some kind of prescription or guidance on how we could use it for strength, power, and endurance adaptations. So maybe let's start on strength.
Okay, cool. So I guess I'll start by saying that the primary adaptation to blood flow restricted resistance exercise, so the adaptation that's received the most evidence, is hypertrophy. So we know that when we compare hypertrophy from low load blood flow restriction exercise to high load strength training, very similar. So there's no there yet. They're completely equivalent, which is great. So we know that we can get the same degree of hypertrophy with this novel method compared to lifting heavy. With strength, we still see an improvement in strength with a low load blood flow restriction exercise, but it's often inferior to what we get with high load training. And if we think back to the ways that we can improve strength, it kind of makes sense. So you can either increase the cross-sectional area of the muscle as one way of getting stronger, or we can develop those neural connections. And I think from what I understand, blood flow restriction improves strength purely by increasing the cross-sectional area, but we may not get the same degree of neural adaptations as high load strength training. So I think that makes sense to me why we still see some improvement in strength, but it's just often inferior to a high load training. But most of the time in these research studies, they're just training periods where they only use low load blood flow restriction exercise, where in reality, people are likely, if they can tolerate high-load training, they're going to be predominantly doing that and then supplementing it with some low-load blood flow restriction training. And the few studies that have looked at that have shown increases in strength that are comparable to high-load training, and in some cases, even better than just high-load training alone. So I think if strength was your priority and you wanted to involve blood flow restriction training, it would be in a kind of supplementary fashion where you might perform, you know, mainly your high load training sessions throughout the week, and then maybe dot one or two low load blood flow restriction sessions within the week. Or you might have like an isolated block, say in like a 6 week block, you might have like one or two isolated low load blood flow restriction sessions where you only do that style of training for that week. But if it's really important to keep the high load stimulus in order to kind of maximize those strength adaptations.
So could we go back to the improvement in neuromuscular, I don't know how to call it, connectivity or...
Oh, yes, the neural adaptations?
Yeah, the neural adaptations. And did you say that they are non-existent with BFR?
I don't know if I can say that they're non-existent. I think there's just a lack of evidence to show the same degree of neural adaptations as with high load training. There, a potential mechanism for why that is the case is when we perform low load blood flow restriction training, we get, like we said, that increase in metabolites. We have this feedback loop where these afferent fibers, so fibers that sit in the muscle, the sensory fibers, they detect the buildup of metabolites, and then they feed that information back to the central nervous system, and they have an inhibitory effect. So these things are called group 3 and 4 afferents, and they kind of almost inhibit the motor unit firing rate. So that means that's why we get fatigued so much when we perform low lead blood flow restriction. But because they have that inhibitory effect on the central nervous system, that could be why we don't see the same level of adaptation in the CNS compared to high load training. And it also makes sense that when we perform low load blood flow restriction, the kind of limiting factor is all the peripheral processes. So the buildup of metabolites, the flow of the supply of blood. Whereas in high load training, sometimes the limiting factor can be those central processes like motor unit recruitment and firing rate. So I think that's why we don't see the same level of adaptation in the central nervous system, but that's not something that's been kind of fully proven with research. And I think it's an area that it still needs to be uncovered a little bit more. That's just my hypothesis, I guess.
No, thank you. That's very interesting. All right. Are we ready to move to the most important question, which is the role of blood flow restriction in power adaptations?
Yes, I think so. So this one is another really interesting area. So off the bat, a lot of studies that have looked at power adaptation, so things like jumping and sprinting performance, they show that blood flow restriction has negligible input. So there's no real improvement in these actions of power with blood flow restriction exercise. And I think that comes back to, again, like the primary outcome being hypertrophy, which can encompass a lot of fatigue. So I think with power, obviously, the way that we perform power training is, you know, high rest periods, low reps, high intensities, whereas blood flow restriction is literally the opposite of that. So it's short rest periods, high reps, lots of fatigue. So I think there's that lack of specificity, which is why we don't see the same degree as improvement in power training. I think we could have an improvement in power long-term. Like if you think back to the way that we'd normally structure training for like hypertrophy, you'd have a block of hypertrophy, then you'd transition into strength training, and then you'd focus on power and try and produce that force rapidly. I think if you did the same thing with blood flow restriction, you could see an improvement in power, like indirectly. But I think blood flow restriction training itself is not going to be able to improve power adaptations just because it opposes it. The repetition velocity when you're performing BFR training is very slow. So I think you don't get the same kind of explosive adaptations that you would for power training. But I do think that there are a few studies that have shown improvements in power related adaptations, but it's been with blood flow restriction applied in a slightly different format. So some of these studies have used high load training with BFR. So I think there was one study where it was in rugby players, and they used loads of 70% of one rep max with an intermittent blood flow restriction protocol. So that's where you release the pressure in the cuffs in the rest periods. And then there was another study where I think they threw BFR on during sprint interval training. And both of those studies saw improvements in, like, I think it was jump height or rate of force development. So they're kind of indices of power. But I think using the conventional format with the low loads and the high repetition numbers, you might not see an improvement in power straight away. But then after a period of power training, it might be greater having performed the BFR training.
Did you see any studies in Olympic weightlifting or powerlifting?
Yes. Yeah, there's actually a really interesting study from one of my colleagues, Thomas Bjornsson, who is a Norwegian strength and conditioning coach and a researcher. And he used some national level Norwegian powerlifters. And what they did, they had a 6-week block of their usual training, which obviously involves high loads. And then one group of the powerlifters had 2 1-week blocks of BFR kind of embedded into that 6 weeks. And the really cool thing was that they saw an improvement in hypertrophy, but it was specifically hypertrophy of type 1 muscle fibers. So I think this is because those athletes were already very well adapted. So they're probably close to their genetic ceiling and had like already high cross-sectional area of their type 2 fibers. So maybe this style of training selectively kind of stressed their type 1 fibers. But in any case, their type 1 fibers increased, and that was correlated with an increase in strength as well. So these powerlifters got stronger, and it was because they were adapting their type 1 fibers, whereas the control group, they stayed the same, and they obviously were already quite adapted, but they didn't get the same stimulus to their type 1 fibers, so their muscle size stayed the same, and I think their 1RM strength went up, but the other group, their isokinetic strength went up. So they were basically very similar, but one group got a little bit of extra hypertrophy from this training.
Is it worth it?
yeah, it's interesting. I think the powerlifters struggled a little bit because they were doing blood flow restriction with front squats, which is particularly challenging. The compound exercises with BFR are quite stressful, but if you throw it on and do something like leg extensions, it's a little bit easier to tolerate.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have something interesting on endurance adaptations?
Yes. Yeah. So this is one of the coolest things I think about blood flow restriction is that most of the time when we think about endurance adaptations, we think, okay, you need to perform aerobic training to get those adaptations. And then we think of like strength training and muscular adaptations as a separate category. But what's really interesting with blood flow restriction exercise is that we almost get the best of both worlds. So even while performing resistance exercise with BFR, we get a range of endurance adaptations. So these are mainly local adaptations, so things that happen in the muscle. So things like an increase in mitochondrial content and an increase in angiogenesis, so the formation of new blood vessels. But both of those things happen at the same time as the muscle getting increasing in size and also getting stronger. So usually we kind of think of those two things as being separate processes, and they maybe interfere with each other and we don't get the best of both worlds. But blood flow restriction, we tend to see both of those things happening. So that's obviously going to be very advantageous for a lot of athletes that require many different fitness qualities. So maybe like team sport athletes, they need to develop their endurance capacity, but also strength qualities as well. So what's really interesting is you get those important adaptations. So the mitochondrial content, the angiogenesis, you can get that from just regular resistance training. So the same format that I explained earlier. So it would be like low loads, 20 to 40% high repetition numbers. You can also perform blood flow restriction with low intensity aerobic training. So even things like walking on a treadmill, low intensity cycling, that's been demonstrated to improve people's VO2 max. Even highly trained athletes that already have high VO2 max, they get a little improvement from that. So yeah, there's a range of different ways that we can use BFR with different exercise modalities to get those endurance adaptations as well. So actually one of my studies that this part of the study hasn't been published, but what we showed was, so it was a high load training group and a low load BFR group. They performed training for 9 weeks and we took some muscle biopsies and the activity of some enzymes, so citrate synthase and COX-4, they're two enzymes that are basically markers for mitochondrial content. They shot up massively in the low load BFR group. And that was kind of comparable to studies that have done like sprint interval training. So pretty intense, like endurance stuff. And the high load resistance training basically saw like a no change or even a little bit of a decrease in these enzymes. But when we look at the hypertrophy between the two groups, they were exactly the same. Pretty robust increases in hypertrophy and then also increases in strength as well. So we get basically this additional benefit of endurance training adaptations as well as the strength stuff with blood flow restriction.
All right, question to follow up on that. You know that weightlifters and powerlifters don't love their cardio. They know they should do it, but they hate it, so they don't. Would BFR be an option to get a bit of cardio while doing, I don't know, accessories or some parts of the session with you, the use of this technique?
Yes, I think, well, in order to have like a well-rounded cardiovascular fitness, I do think you need to perform some aerobic training so that you do get those central adaptations. I know that that's not the answer you're looking for, but definitely within like the heart and the lungs, you'd probably likely have to perform some aerobic training to get those adaptations, but definitely from the local perspective, so everything happening within the muscle, it very much looks like you can get the same level of adaptation as things like cycling, running from performing resistance training. But it would be, you know, more low load, high repetition type of training. So maybe that's not, again, something that powerlifters like to do, but yeah. You can get those endurance adaptations from doing it.
Fair enough. It was a question worth asking. Okay, one more question about accessories. Do you think it would be applicable during accessories? So these exercises that are added to supplement the main weightlifting or powerlifting training?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think that would be a key avenue to use blood flow restriction. So I think I mentioned before, like ways that you could incorporate it into high load training. You could use it as a separate session or separate training blocks, even within the same session. So you could start with your compound lifts that you perform high loads, and then maybe you have a finisher that would be an accessory lift where you use BFR. I think they work particularly well for accessory lifts because I mentioned it before around like the level of discomfort and pain that you get from performing BFR with a compound exercise. That might limit how much work you can perform. But if you're doing it with an accessory lift, so something like a leg press or a leg extension, I think you can probably push yourself a little bit more and perform more work and therefore maybe get more adaptations in that format. That's just some more anecdotal stuff that we've noticed. And even chatting to Thomas Bjornsson, the researcher I mentioned before, when he's used it with his athletes, the kind of Olympic Norwegian athletes, he said that they tend to struggle a little bit and they almost fatigue more centrally. So they kind of almost give up before their legs give up when doing it with like a front squat or a back squat. But if you kind of strap someone into like a leg extension and just throw the BFR on, they can kind of just push themselves until their legs give up. So I think that's an important consideration is when selecting the exercise, trying to achieve more of that peripheral fatigue rather than central fatigue, if that's your main focus is trying to maximize like adaptations like endurance, muscular endurance or hypertrophy as well.
Awesome. So you said increased angiogenesis and low load, which screams to me it could be potentially used in injuries. Would you say that's the case?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is probably the main avenue that people associate with blood flow restriction exercise. And I guess the reason for that is because you can begin the rehab process maybe a little bit earlier than if you were just to use traditional resistance training. So in the paper that I have written, I kind of put together a four-step process of how it could be introduced at different stages along the rehab process. And I think one of the coolest ones is that you can use it almost immediately. So as soon as the athlete has the injury or they have their kind of corrective surgery, you can use blood flow restriction at rest during immobilization or just bed rest. So you can throw the cuffs on without exercise and just inflate them for a period of say 3 to 5 minutes, then you deflate them. And those cycles of ischemia and reperfusion seem to have a little bit of a protective effect against atrophy and strength loss as well. And then if you want to maximize that, you can combine it with something called neuromuscular electrical stimulation, NMES, and that seems to have a kind of potentiation effect with the BFR. So essentially with the BFR alone, you're getting a little bit of metabolic stress, but then with the NMES, you get a little bit of mechanical tension. So the effect on hypertrophy and strength, improving strength, is elevated a little bit more when you combine both those two. So that's what you do initially when the person can't, you know, do any weight bearing activities. Then step two is combining it with low intensity aerobic training. So that could be things like still non-weight bearing activities like cycling or even just walking on a treadmill. And that's been demonstrated to actually improve hypertrophy and strength, which is weird because you think walking, like I know my parents like love walking and I'm like, well, you're not going to be able to improve strength or muscle from that. But with BFI, seems that you actually can.
Wow.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. So it's at low speeds as well. It's like maybe 3 to 5 kilometers per hour on a treadmill. You just have the cuffs on. And after, you know, a period of like 15 minutes, it starts to get quite tough. And I think it's just because there is a little bit of mechanical tension involved with walking, but then you just elevate it by increasing the metabolic stress with the cuffs. And then after those activities can be tolerated, then the next step, step three, would be to perform low load blood flow restriction exercise in the kind of conventional format. So with resistance exercises, but loads of about 20 to 40% at 1 rep max. And then finally, it's transitioning back to high load strength training, which is then supplemented with low load blood flow restriction as well.
Well, that's very useful. Would you have any other risks or precautions we have to take while using or thinking about using this technique?
Yes, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of populations that are contraindicated from blood flow restriction exercise. The Australian Institute of Sport have put together a really helpful screening document. So that has all of the populations that are contraindicated. So if you use that as a practitioner, you'll be able to kind of easily identify who is and isn't suitable. I think a lot of the conditions are related to like the vascular system because it does put a lot of stress on the vascular system, but otherwise like healthy individuals will be fine. Some other risks are around muscle damage. That's a pretty interesting area because generally the research is a bit split. Like some people have reported really significant muscle damage with blood flow restriction exercise, whereas others show very minimal, particularly compared to high load training. But I think it's because if it's a novel stimulus, so if individuals aren't accustomed to BFR, there's a potential for them to get a really like potent like muscle damage response. So there's been even cases of rhabdomyolysis following BFR. But I think that's just when someone who is not very trained has performed way too much volume. So just like regular exercise, that would be the case. So it's important to note that although that muscle damage is a little bit less likely with blood flow restriction exercise, it's not impossible and it can happen. So you do need to gradually introduce the stimulus and then progress it from there. And we do see a repeated bout effect with BFR. So similar to like eccentric training, one session will kind of confer protective effects in following sessions. So that's why if I was advising someone to begin with blood flow restriction training, it would be maybe 3 sets instead of the 4 and definitely not taking those sets to failure versus like down the line once you're a bit more comfortable, maybe you're adding 4 or 5 sets with those sets taken to failure.
Okay, let's finish with a bit of summary. So your 3 tips for coaches who would like to use blood flow restriction.
Okay, I guess tip number one would be selecting a suitable cuff. So in the lower body, you want your cuff to be generally a little bit wider than for the upper body. So when you're doing your research and trying to find a suitable cuff, I would say good width for the lower body would be like 10 centimeters. And then in the upper body, the key thing there is that you don't want a massive cuff, a really wide one, because that's going to sit over a lot of the muscle belly, particularly the biceps. So I'd go for something like a 5 centimeter cuff at maximum for the upper body. And then I guess number two is selecting the appropriate pressure. So the way that we do it in a research setting is to use ultrasound, and we want to measure people's blood flow as we progressively inflate the cuff. Whereas I guess a lot of people in practice maybe don't have access to ultrasound. It is becoming a bit more affordable. I think there's one ultrasound machine that I bought recently for like $300 or $400, but I understand maybe not everyone has access to that. But what you can do in a more practical way is to measure the limb circumference of the individual. And there's formulas out there that uses limb circumference to kind of estimate what pressure can be used. And then failing that, you could always just use an intensity, like a subjective rating of 7 out of 10 tightness. So it should reflect something like that. So it should be quite tight, but not like so tight that you're getting all these other things like, I don't know, tingling in your hands or feeling a bit lightheaded. Obviously, if that's the case, just let the pressure out and take it down a couple notches. So that was two. And then I think the third tip for people would be, I guess, yeah, what we talked about before, trying to individualize the dose as much as you can. And maybe that's adjusting the weight that you do or adding more reps in so that people are finishing sets close to failure. Because we do know that in order to kind of maximize the training adaptations, particularly with low load resistance training, we do need to be finishing sets close to failure, where that's not the same kind of necessity with high load training. So if you're not achieving that with, you know, the generic 30% of 1RM, 30, 15, 15, then adjust some of those factors, whether it's adding on repetitions or reducing the weight or increasing the weight, to make sure athletes are hopefully finishing each set with maybe 2 or 3 reps left in the tank.
Excellent. Thank you so much. 2 short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite color?
I'd have to say navy blue, I think.
Right. And the last one is, where people can find you if they want to follow your work or ask you a question. Is there a place online where should they go?
Yep. I'm on Twitter or X. My handle is just Charlie J. Davids. And people can find my email online, I think, just by going onto the La Trobe University website. So yeah, happy to chat anything related to research or blood flow restriction. Definitely reach out to me.
Well, thank you so much, Charlie. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.